Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Human Age, The World Shaped. By us is Diane Ackerman's 2014 work of literary nonfiction about the Anthropocene, the proposed geological era in which human activity has become a dominant planetary force. Ackerman, known for combining science writing with poetic observation, examines how cities, agriculture, climate change, species movement, technology, and human imagination have altered Earth on a scale once associated mainly with volcanoes, oceans, and ice ages. The book is not a technical policy manual or a narrowly scientific treatise. Its purpose is interpretive to help general readers see familiar landscapes, machines, bodies, and ecosystems as evidence of a human-shaped planet. Ackerman moves between natural history, environmental reflection, and futurist speculation, balancing concern over ecological damage with attention to creativity and adaptation. The result is a broad, lyrical account of human power, responsibility, and uncertainty at a moment when nature and culture can no longer be treated as separate domains. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Anthropocene as a framework for human planetary power. Ackerman presents the Anthropocene not only as a scientific proposal, but as a change in human self-understanding. The central claim is that people have become a geological force, altering climate systems, coastlines, species distributions, soils, oceans, and atmospheric chemistry. This framing matters because it shifts environmental thinking away from the idea that nature is an untouched background and humans are merely visitors or local disruptors. In Ackerman's account, human influence is now embedded in the planet's operating systems. Roads, dams, farms, mines, cities, plastics, emissions, and engineered habitats become part of Earth history. The book emphasizes the scale of this transformation, without reducing it to catastrophe alone. Ackerman is interested in the paradox that the same species capable of severe environmental harm is also capable of reflection, repair, design, and invention. Her treatment of the Anthropocene is therefore both descriptive and ethical. Naming a human age means recognizing consequences that extend beyond individual lifetimes. It asks readers to consider how present choices will appear in deep time, and what forms of planetary stewardship are possible when human action can no longer be separated from. Natural process. Secondly, cities, light, and human-made landscapes as signs of a transformed Earth. One of the book's distinctive strengths is its attention to visible evidence of human transformation. Ackerman often treats the planet as something that can be read from above, especially through the image of Earth at night, where city lights reveal settlement patterns, energy use, density, commerce, and collective habits. This perspective turns urbanization into more than a social fact. It becomes a planetary signature. Cities are portrayed as concentrations of ingenuity and consumption, places where humans cluster, build, illuminate, transport, heat, cool, and connect. The built environment is therefore not outside nature, but a new ecological layer shaped by human need and imagination. Ackerman's analysis also broadens the meaning of landscape. Highways, suburbs, farms, airports, reservoirs, and artificial coastlines are not simply backdrops to modern life. They are physical records of choices about mobility, food, security, wealth, and convenience. By reading human structures as environmental evidence, the book encourages readers to notice how ordinary infrastructure participates in planetary change. This approach makes the Anthropocene concrete, showing that the human age is visible in daily surroundings as well as in scientific data. Thirdly, technology as both extension of human perception and source of new risk, Ackerman gives significant attention to technologies that enlarge human capacities, including robotics, advanced data systems, 3D printing, medical innovation, and speculative nanotechnology. Her interest is not simply in gadgets, but in the way tools extend perception, memory, reach, and intervention. Robots and intelligent machines, for example, can explore environments that are too remote, dangerous, or data-rich for unaided human beings. They help scientists interpret enormous quantities of information and observe natural processes at scales far beyond ordinary experience. This makes technology a continuation of the human drive to understand nature. At the same time, the book recognizes that technological power complicates responsibility. Tools that solve one problem can create new dependencies, environmental costs, or ethical dilemmas. Ackerman tends to approach emerging technology with guarded fascination rather than simple rejection. She sees invention as part of human nature, yet she also places it inside the larger story of planetary alteration. The key issue is not whether technology is good or bad in isolation, but how it is governed, distributed, and directed. In the human age, invention becomes an ecological act because technical systems increasingly shape bodies, habitats, and futures. Fourthly, nature and culture as interwoven rather than separate categories. a recurring implication of the human age is that the traditional boundary between nature and culture has become unstable. Ackerman shows that many environments people call natural have already been modified by agriculture, climate change, invasive species, conservation programs, pollution, or urban expansion. Likewise, human spaces are not ecologically empty. Cities host animals, plants, microbes, weather patterns, and adaptive behaviors shaped by built conditions. This interweaving changes how environmental responsibility must be understood. If people imagine nature as existing only in distant wilderness, then most daily decisions appear disconnected from ecological consequence. Ackerman instead presents human life as embedded in networks of water, air, soil, energy, food, and other species. The book's literary method reinforces this point by moving fluidly between scientific explanation and sensory description. It does not treat beauty as separate from fact. A city at night, a designed garden, a damaged habitat, or a technological device can all reveal the same underlying condition human culture now participates in the making of environments. This does not erase the value of wildness, but it makes environmental thought more demanding. Care for nature must include the places humans have already changed. Lastly, hope, ethical responsibility, and the limits of technological optimism, Ackerman's tone is notable because it avoids both despair and simple celebration. She describes serious environmental pressures, including climate disruption, biodiversity loss, and resource strain, but she also emphasizes imagination, adaptation, and scientific creativity. This balance gives the book its characteristic optimism, though that optimism has limits. A major question raised by the book and by some critical responses is whether technological possibility can be discussed without enough attention to inequality. If advanced medical tools, climate adaptations, or environmental protections are available only to wealthy societies or privileged groups, then the human age is not experienced equally. The phrase humanity can conceal large differences in responsibility, vulnerability, and benefit. Ackerman's broad, species-level perspective is powerful because it captures planetary scale, but it can also smooth over political and economic distinctions. Still, the book's ethical value lies in making responsibility visible. It asks readers to think about what kind of world human beings are designing, intentionally or not. Its hope is not based on certainty that innovation will save everything. It rests on the claim that awareness, imagination, and choice still matter in shaping the human-made future. In conclusion, The Human Age is best suited for readers who want an intellectually expansive introduction to the Anthropocene rather than a technical environmental science textbook or a detailed policy agenda. It will appeal to general readers, students, educators, environmentalists, science enthusiasts, and readers of literary nonfiction who value style as much as information. Its practical benefit is mainly perceptual. It trains readers to see cities, technologies, landscapes, species changes, and even artificial light as evidence of planetary transformation. Its intellectual benefit is broader, encouraging reflection on how human creativity and human damage are intertwined. Compared with more data-heavy books on climate change or conservation, Ackerman's work stands out for its synthesis of natural history, philosophy, science, and poetic description. She is less interested in prescribing a narrow solution than in changing the scale at which readers think. The book is strongest when it makes the Anthropocene vivid and emotionally legible without abandoning scientific seriousness. Readers seeking rigorous economic analysis, activism strategy, or policy detail may find it too sweeping. Readers seeking a humane, beautifully written account of what it means to live on a human-shaped Earth will find it distinctive within contemporary environmental literature. If you would like to support Diane Ackerman, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.